You're listening to Stateside. I'm Laura Weber Davis, in for April Baer. We've talked in recent weeks about how more urban and suburban districts in southern Michigan have announced a fully online start to the fall semester. But the situation is different in Michigan's rural areas. Some are offering online options. Others look at the relatively low case numbers in the UP counties, and they find the risk acceptable, at least acceptable enough to come back in person. Gina Pepin is a teacher and reading specialist with Escanaba Area Schools. She was also Michigan Teacher of the Year for Region 1 in the 2018-19 school year. April Baer asked Gina about Escanaba's plans for September.
Can you tell us about what the plans are in Escanaba for school this fall?
Well, we're slowly getting to some of the plans, but I can tell you that our school district, as well as the outlier districts here in this area, have three plans for phase 3, phase 4, and phase 5. Our particular district actually just put out their plan, and they had four options. The first one was face-to-face, and then there was distance learning using like the Michigan virtual. We also have an early college option and a dual enrollment college here through Escanaba. And then there was the self-paced, and then there was a hybrid. And the hybrid kind of led you a little bit to more of that information. The hybrid said a combination of any of those options that would be best suitable for a family or an individual student. So I'm thinking that as these plans get solidified or become more transparent, we'll get a better understanding of what self-paced is. It could even involve some of the things with the early college or the Michigan virtual. Or it could include some self-paced instructional pieces that are designed through individual teachers, too.
Well, how are you feeling about the options as they stand right now? Have you talked much with your colleagues about what it would mean to work online versus teaching in person?
Well, because of the quick turnaround that happened in the spring, I think that there's a lot of misperceptions with a lot of things, even with colleagues as well as families. One of the issues that we faced was that we had to learn things really quickly. And our district went with Google Classroom. There were a lot of people that didn't really know Google Classroom, and Google Classroom was tough for elementary. I think that there's some apprehensiveness as to having to use that again. I know some districts are going with some common platforms. They're looking at investing in some of those things. I guess they're one of the biggest fear, of course, is safety, as well as time to learn what their roles and responsibilities are going to be, just that there's an adequate amount of time that we can do the things that we need to do and do them successfully and feel confident about that. And that's super important to any educator at this point right now.
Do you have a sense of what kind of in-person environment you might be returning to, assuming that there is at least some in-person teaching?
So I've spoke with several superintendents and principals across the Upper Peninsula, and right now they're all planning for a face-to-face because we are in phase 5. However, our numbers are climbing really quickly. So it kind of looks like masks are going to be required for a majority of the districts in the hallways for everybody, as well as on the buses. There's going to be staggered times for lunches and recess, and teachers will kind of be in charge of that. They will be the ones taking their classes to and from each of these different things. A lot of principals and superintendents noted contact tracing, and the more that they can minimize that interaction, the better, so that way they can keep these students, at least in the elementary realm, where there's less exposure, so itinerants would be coming to class. I just heard from a district a little bit ago, and they said they're really encouraging windows to be open and people to teach outside. So my husband teaches in a K-12 district, and I used to teach in a K-12 district a long time ago for about 10 years. And we could go out the back door, and there were acres around the fields. And so that's really nice. And you could take your kids out on blankets, and they could social distance. It was a beautiful opportunity to teach. We did that often the last 6 weeks of school.
That's an awesome option through September and October. I don't know about once you hit November.
How are you feeling
about the possibility of being in a classroom again?
It would be a little bit different for me. A couple of my fears are I do small groups. And my building is first and second graders this year. We actually just closed the building in Escanaba. So we shifted over to just first and second grades in my building. So being a reading interventionist, I have, you know, groups of three kids at a time. So to me, that's a lot of exposure, and trying to be able to keep those safety protocols with groups that are coming and going throughout the day, it is going to be a little challenge. To take a lot of prep work, meaning that they'll each have their own materials and they each have their own supplies. And so just making sure that there isn't any cross-contamination with those types of things. My other fear is subbing. We don't have substitutes. The average age of our substitutes in the Upper Peninsula is 60 and above because they're retired teachers. We can't even get substitutes in our buildings to cover. So my fear is that I will be a substitute for a long time in different classrooms. And so I'm hoping that those plans are really defined and that there are options for that.
Right. Gina, listening to you talk about the outdoor options, I mean, of course, there's some parents and kids who might, and teachers too, who might totally cheer that. But it occurs to me that may be at odds with the way things are usually run in a modern schoolroom, right?
Absolutely. We have done a lot of training in the past 10 or so years on safety protocol and procedures. And it is a great fear, honestly. It is, you know, open your windows, open your doors once again, and take the kids outside as much as you can. And so it is a trade-off.
As you mentioned, it was really chaotic back in the springtime when so many districts had to shut down and transition to a full online plan, like within a matter of weeks back in March. Were there additional challenges in rural districts with that process?
Absolutely. So there was a lot of technology bumps. For example, we had to get a lot of Chromebooks out to some folks. A lot of areas in the Upper Peninsula don't even have cell phone coverage, where you can go for 30 minutes or so and there just isn't a cell signal whatsoever. So working with some grants and some local providers, we were able to get some hotspots and jetpacks provided to families and kind of distributed throughout the community. Some of the schools actually put some boosters on the outside of their buildings so that families, if they had a vehicle, could travel to the parking lot and actually log on and check in and do some different things. Another issue up here is Verizon covers one area and AT&T covers another. So there's a little bit of varied services across different areas across the UP. So trying to be able to balance both of those providers and making sure that folks had technology. Then we collected them all back again. And now I believe our district just put out a goal of getting a Chromebook in all 6 through 12 families of our school district. And I know other districts are working hard on that as well.
Do you think it's possible within districts to make sure that all kids will get the same access to online learning?
I think that is probably our greatest challenge up here. It most definitely is. And the support, I had a couple of live reading groups that actually logged on, and then I met with the students and was trying to read through our, you know, the reading program that we use. And I spent more time just trying to get them to not spin their phone or sing a song or show me their bedroom and different things like that. So they weren't necessarily even monitored at home. So even the live teaching was really a challenge for us. And again, getting it in the hands of everybody is really, really tough. The support wasn't there because everybody was, you know, using a variety of different technology. So our technology director spent a lot of time supporting the devices that we lent out. But then there's all the other folks that, you know, have an old cell phone or they have an old laptop and they don't have an updated browser and there isn't anyone necessarily to take on those challenges.
Wow. What is your biggest concern for your students at this point?
Two concerns would be that if we do switch, like I just heard Ohio, a large majority of Ohio just switched over to distance learning to start. If Michigan decides to go distance learning in the beginning, local entities have shared here that we just don't have the daycare facilities or even the certified placements and childcare to support enough families. A big fear of kids getting left home alone, young children, and it's so spread out here that we just don't know. And the other fear is that, you know, if we do go face to face, there are folks without transportation and there are folks without being able to communicate with them. So if their child is showing symptoms or they come to school with a fever or something that we need to send them home, they often can't come and get them. So that's a big issue.
Right. What have you been hearing from families?
I have been hearing that everybody's just apprehensive. And I, you know, you look on social media and there's been some really good things shared. There was a pediatrician the other day that shared something about just, you know, no matter what decision you make, it's your decision, it's going to be right. And I think that that's, people just aren't sure. Like I said, I'm a teacher, my husband's a teacher, and our kids go to a district in between. We have a high-risk daughter who has asthma really bad, and we're just like, we don't know what to do. And I feel like crunch time is coming, and I don't think they're going to know till last minute either.
If you had a way to, you know, walk into the State House or the U.S. Capitol and make a case to lawmakers about the kind of supports that rural districts and rural students and rural families need right now, what kinds of things would you talk to them about?
Well, I would definitely talk about a consistency of technology and just the availability, making sure that every family had the support and the devices that they need to be successful. That would be absolutely important. The other thing would be to make sure that there's funding for schools and that the infrastructure and the safety supports and protocols are just as equitable for teachers as they are for the doctors working in hospitals. My brother-in-law is an ER physician, and they talk about just the new air filtration systems that they have and the equipment and the PPE and those types of things. And I know that it isn't going to be the same in schools, and we need those infrastructure to support us so that we can do our jobs.
Well, Gina, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to talk to us about this, and good luck this fall.
Thank you so much.
Gina Pepin is a teacher and reading specialist with Escanaba Area Schools. She is also the co-author of The Power of Joyful Reading. It is available online right now from your favorite bookseller.